Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on Radio MD, iHeart, or wherever you download us from. Thank you for doing that. Today, this is 1183B, and the Bs are always great guests, and today will be no exception. Michael Greger is a physician and obviously one of the great contributors to the world of aging. As he would say it in the book, How Not to Die, or the recent, most recent book, number two on the New York Times list, How Not to Age. The contribution he has made in nutritionfacts.org is the website. It's where everyone goes to for that exact thing, anything on nutrition. We're going to be discussing aging and healthy longevity, or as I usually call it, your real age. And Michael Greger is really one of the legends in this field. And although I think he's a legend and he's done great work, we're not going to let him off easy. Michael, as people know, I try and read the books before we cover them on the show, and I try and read at least half of the book. It's tough to read half of this book. I allocated 2 weeks to do it. I'm about a third of the way through it. And I did skip around a little bit, but it is solidly referenced, and it's a real contribution to the world of aging. Our sponsors are Life's First Naturals, the makers of both bovine colostrum and TrueBiotics. Go to their website, lifesfirstnaturals.com, to see the randomized double-blind controlled trials on why they're such a benefit and why I believe I take them every day. Also, the other sponsor is our own longevityplaybook.com, which does exactly what Michael Greger wants you to do, that is have a younger actual age, that is a reduced risk of disability and death, and that's what How Not to Age is all about. Now, Michael, I want to get one point in before we start. I always thought, and I always do think, that the greatest change in rate of aging comes from stress management. You make the point in the book that it's food, nutritional choices, food choices, and I suppose also portion size and timing, but at least food choices that make the biggest difference. Debate me.
Well, according to the Global Burden of Disease study, the largest systematic analysis of risk factors in history, the number one killer of Americans is the American diet, bumping tobacco smoking to number two. Cigarettes not only kill about 500,000 Americans every year, whereas our diet kills many more. I don't believe stress even makes the list. I believe inactivity is down at number six. Stress certainly is associated with diminished longevity. But the question is it cause and effect? Stress does not appear to be independently shorten lifespan. When we're stressed, we not only eat more, but we're eating more foods high in sugar, fat, calories. We increase our substance use, alcohol, tobacco, illicit drugs. So similar to kind of social ties, social isolation and loneliness, kind of bereavement, stress, the effects on longevity appear to be mediated through these lifestyle behaviors. So if we can maintain, despite the stress, despite the loneliness, if we can maintain a healthy lifestyle, we should be able to maintain our life expectancy.
And the point I wanted to make is if you look at the Whitehall studies or the from Great Britain or the Alameda County studies in the U.S., stress, having three major stressors in 1 year, increases your risk of dying as if and disability as if you're 32 years older, whereas nutrition from the worst to the best diet's about a 27-year effect from worst to best. So that's how I did that. But again, if you look at it overall, only about 30% of Americans have three of the 14 major life stresses in any year. So I think they're both major effects. And as you say, one of the things that stress does is cause you to eat food that is death-causing or disability-causing. When we get to that, let me ask you also about something that I've recently changed my view on, and that is the amount of protein in diet. As we're getting older, we learn that in order to maintain muscle mass and to maintain the ability to function and be mobile and functional and brain functional, we need more protein in the diet. You don't need it all the time, but probably 25 out of 30 days a month you need it based on the Longo studies. Yet you talk about less protein in the diet. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, when it comes to protein and aging, I was surprised that less may be more. Reducing protein intake, meaning restricting protein intake down to recommended levels, the only thing I could find that could help block all 11 of the aging pathways, boosting NAD, improving immunity, decreasing oxidative stress, inflammation, insulin resistance, as well as the cancer-promoting growth hormone, IGF-1. And surprisingly, there appears to be no benefit of adding extra protein to the diets of older men and women in terms of muscle mass, muscle strength, or physical performance. Instead, the excess protein most Americans are getting causes a drop in the pro-longevity hormone FGF21, a drop in testosterone, a worsening of the age-accelerating enzyme mTOR. So we should strive to stick to the recommended level of 0.8 grams per healthy kilogram of body weight, maybe bumping that up to 1 gram per kilogram after age 65. Comes out to be about 45 grams a day for the average height woman, 55 grams a day for the average height man.
But the data from Longo's study, 5 days a month, and he believes in people without chronic disease, maybe 5 days a quarter. But in any case, the data from his studies are 5 days a month of reduced protein resets all those factors that you just mentioned into a normal range. And then he resumed the normal Mediterranean diet. And we can talk about the Mediterranean diet because you have some good views on that, I believe. And since Longo's studies seem prospective, and although they are in the longevity and disability field in, if you will, in animals, except for, I mean, he's done it in humans and looked at biomarkers, but obviously doesn't, since he's only done this for about 6 years, doesn't have longevity data in humans. And that's part of the problem with almost all of our diet information. We have intermediate markers, but nothing long-term.
Agreed. Yeah, but the fasting mimicking diet studies that he's done show that you can get that, you know, remarkable drop in IGF-1 just restricting protein 5 days a month. Although, you know, he sells this kind of prepackaged little, you know, dehydrated soups and herbal teas and stuff. I feel like instead of spending all that money, you could accomplish the same kind of improvements in biomarkers by, you know, sticking to kind of above ground vegetables and doing protein restriction.
And in fact, in his first study, he just did it with a homemade tomato soup. So the initial studies in graduate students that found this was a tomato soup, tomato and corn soup, if you will, with onions.
You're making me hungry. Sounds good to me.
It actually does taste very good. Now, you also have some really wonderful information in the first third of the book on the aspects of mechanisms of aging that are studied. And I hopped into specific points, but I want to get back to why you wrote the book. Why did you go from How Not to Die and How Not to Diet to How Not to Age? You know, this is a softball question, so to speak, but it's an important one, I think, for our audience.
Yeah, well, you know, this book really reminded me a little of my last book on weight loss. You know, both the diet and anti-aging industries are these multi-billion-dollar behemoths. You know, with so much money in the mix, the temptation to promote products purporting all sorts of preposterous claims is apparently irresistible, right? Even an educated layperson seeking basic practical advice in either arena, you know, living longer or lighter, is faced with an inscrutable barrage of pills and potions. Look, even as a physician with the luxury of wading neck deep through the peer-reviewed literature for years, it's been a challenge to kind of tease out the naked truth from the, you know, emperor's garb. But I feel that makes the endeavor that much more important. If it took me 3 years to sift through all the science, I'm afraid the casual observer would have little hope in separating facts from farce.
This is really, you looked at the mechanisms of aging, put them into a way of showing how a diet or the whole food, plant-based, with a few exceptions, meaning not going with French fries or fried food, et cetera, and increased sugars. But you went and showed how diet can affect those mechanisms of aging. And I think that's a major contribution that this book offers. And in addition, I don't think it's just the science that it offers, but you get to really specific aspects of food in it so that everyone can look at it and find it.
Yeah, my aim was really to create the most comprehensive anti-aging book, covering every possible strategy for slowing down the aging process for the longest, healthiest life based on the best available scientific evidence. And the good news is, turns out we have tremendous power over our health, destiny, and longevity, and that the vast majority of premature death and disability is preventable with a healthy enough diet and lifestyle. And yeah, that first part one, I talk about kind of the 11 most promising pathways for kind of slowing down the sands of time, ending each with practical proposals for targeting them naturally with diet and lifestyle changes. So, you know, boosting the anti-aging enzymes and hormones like AMPK, FGF21, sirtuins, telomerase, while suppressing the pro-aging enzymes and hormones like mTOR and IGF-1, decreasing glycation, inflammation, oxidation, senescence, while preserving autophagy, our telomeres, slowing down the, you know, epigenetic clock. These are all kind of fancy sounding scientific terms, but I really do try to kind of break it down to easily understandable, doable, practical, day-to-day grocery store type takeaways.
One of my common listeners, a listener to my podcasts and who listens to a lot of the material you put out, said to me, you know, you eat salmon almost every day of the week, Michael, me, not you, obviously, and said, Michael Greger says that's got to be one of the worst fish because of contamination. At least from where I get it, my mercury level is near zero, not exactly zero, but near enough to be non-important. So the question is, tell me why my salmon habit is so bad.
Well, if we had a time machine to go back before the Industrial Revolution, that would be one thing. But unfortunately, our oceans have essentially become humanity's sewer. You know, everything eventually flows into the sea. So the, you know, aquatic food chain accumulates the highest levels of chemical pollutants like DDT, PCBs, dioxins. In the U.S., hundreds of thousands of Americans estimated to be born with brain damage every year as a consequence of their mothers consuming mercury-contaminated fish, with the resulting loss of intelligence estimated to cause billions of dollars of lost productivity every year. Now, look, a tuna sandwich, still better than bologna, but something like a hummus wrap would be even healthier, as, you know, Harvard researchers found in their substitution analysis that even just a 3% swap from fish protein to plant protein associated with a 6% decreased risk of all-cause mortality.
So do you think my salmon habit, my wild salmon habit, if you will, is likely to cause me a shortened lifespan?
Well, like, you know, anything in nutrition, foods aren't good or bad, but rather better or worse. So the question is, like, are eggs healthy? Well, compared to breakfast sausage, absolutely. Compared to oatmeal, not even close. So the same thing with fish, right? Better than processed meat, but a healthy whole protein source would be healthier still. So fish, better than what most Americans are eating for lunch, but I think we can tweak your diet to improve it still.
Well, thank you for not being hard on me, but in fact, you know, I am essentially plant-based plus salmon, so healthy plant-based plus salmon. And the reason I do that is I both feel like I need to get the omega-3, the DHA and EPA into my diet that way, since so little is converted from plant sources to DHA. And not only that, it does give you vitamin D in addition and a whole bunch of other things, but also to get my protein to where I believe it should be for 25 days a month. So you and I have a real difference on the amount of protein one should get, at least for 25 days a month.
I do encourage people to consider taking a pollutant-free source of DHA, so an algae-based DHA EPA supplement, 250 milligrams a day. That's something I do.
Yes, so I do that in addition, if you will, 1,100 milligrams a day, if you will, of an algal DHA. But in any case, I think this is a tremendous work, How Not to Age. You can find out much more information about Michael Greger on his spectacular website that I use all the time, nutritionfacts.org, nutritionfacts.org. The book is incredibly well referenced and has a unique way of doing that so that it stayed at under 1,000 pages. How many pages did it end up, Michael, in the final edition?
I think it's 600-something. Unfortunately, they wouldn't publish it in its original 1,200-page form.
And as Michael said, you do get some resistance exercise lifting it, but it is very worthwhile lifting. It is a great, great book and a great addition. Now, I'm going to ask you one more thing that, since I've been privy to some studies on telomere lengthening that are being done at Hopkins, it looks to me, at least in mice and in dogs where they've done the studies at Hopkins, that there is a substance or a therapy that will lengthen telomeres. This seems to me to be one of the holy grails of aging, as you point out. If this is true in humans, then we can get more of our own stem cells reproduced to repair things. If this is true, is that right, Michael? Is that how you would perceive that?
We don't necessarily need a substance. You know, Dr. Dean Ornish, along with Elizabeth Blackburn, did their, you know, plant-based diet and lifestyle intervention, showed in not only an increase in telomerase, but years later, an actual increase in telomere length as well, though certainly interested in any further interventions to bump that up. As you know, I have a chapter on telomere elongation in the book, which really centers around, you know, decreasing oxidative stress and inflammation, and so, you know, quitting smoking, improving one's diet, et cetera, may be able to boost telomerase activity and extend our telomeres.
And as Elizabeth Blackburn pointed out, and I'll point out again, since I'm a big stress management person, that stress management is one of the keys to elongating or to changing both telomeres and telomerase.
I was surprised at how contradictory the literature was. So if you look at like dementia caregivers, some show this boost in telomerase, some show a decrease in telomerase, and you can argue it both ways. So you could certainly kind of cherry pick data going either way, but it wasn't clear to me the effect of stress on telomere length.
Dean Ornish is pretty clear on it, in at least his write-ups on it and in conversations. The key thing is what is present in the book is both the pros and cons. Michael Greger does just a remarkable job in presenting it in this book, How Not to Age. And as I've said to our listeners of the A segments, the data on the Hopkins study are supposed to be public in about 4 weeks. And at that time, I'll get to discuss them on the podcast as well, since it may end up being a major breakthrough. And the interesting thing is they're looking at FDA approval in dogs before humans, as it appears a much more viable, I guess it's a much easier FDA approval process for this. But in any case, stay tuned. We'll have it on the Owner's Manual podcast. Michael, I can't thank you enough for coming on and being willing to take on the tough questions. The book is How Not to Age by Michael Greger, Greger. You can just look at Amazon. It's number 2 on the unfiltered, that is on all books on the bestseller list. and it is number two on the New York Times list. The scientific approach to getting healthier as you get older, how not to age. And again, the wonderful, magnificent website, nutritionfacts.org. Thank our two sponsors, LifeFirstNaturals.com and LongevityPlaybook.com. We'll be back next week. We hope you are too.